Who are you?
I am Feist.
Feist, tell me, is it true that you are responsible for making Justine from Elastica show her underwear in public?
I'm probably one of a few people that can claim that they've done that, yes.
Could you please explain the situation? How did you, Feist, force Justine from Elastica to show her underwear in public, on stage?
I was not there when she bought the jeans. It was not my choice that she buy jeans with so low slung, but I was there when she was gyrating around wearing a WWF-style metal wrestling belt that was up on her waist, and her jeans were down a little bit lower, and then all of a sudden there was thong. There was thong.
And this is when you were playing with Peaches.
Yeah, that show was a Daddy Sagetti Feist duo bill. We did a cross-Canada tour where we shared a band featuring the World Provider, who I know that you've recently done an interview with, who's playing tonight as well in Vancouver. And it was our homecoming show at the Ted's downstairs, whatever, Collision, Wrecking Yard, whatever it was. And Peaches and Gonzalez were in town too, and they crashed the party. They basically literally showed up and did some songs with us, and then it turned into a 3 hours after that smorgasbord. Peaches, Gonzalez, Taylor Savvy, Feist, Bitch Lap Lap, and Elastica were in town, so they got in on it too.
So how did that feel, turning around and looking? And did you look at Justine from Elastica, like her underwear? And I think it actually fell down a bit too, didn't it?
I think there was not very much Elastica in the elastic of her elasticated thong.
Leslie, from the band
Feist,
what was your role exactly in Peaches? Like, were you the hype man?
I was, if I had had an enormous clock I could wear around my neck, that's sort of the character I would have been playing. I was the representative of the audience on stage. I was there to sympathize with them and have them sympathize with me, as if the kind of wide-eyed, oh my God, what's happening, and yet somehow getting with it. That's what any audience member would do if they got up on the stage with Peaches. They'd want to be game. They'd want to be in it, but they'd also be a little shocked. So I was like a sympathetic figure to draw people in, keep them more unaware, and then once they were in, Peaches could do the double 1-2 punch.
Now, Feist, I was wondering, what are the recommendations to people out there that want to be a hype man or hype woman? What do you say? Like, during Peaches, you'd be like, what's up, Peaches? What are the words you use to be a good front person, hype person?
Well, I think one of the most important things is that you can't get too attached to the microphone. You have to do a lot of miming. You have to do a lot of physical hyping, but you got to leave the mic to the person with the voice box, the person who's there to deliver their message, and Peaches being that person. So a lot of the time I would purposely take the cable out of the end of my microphone and then do the hyping without any microphone, but with the prop microphone. Leave the talking to the woman who's there to deliver the goods.
How about words? What sort of words do you use? And what sort of words do you use on stage now? And have you taken your experience as a hype man to new heights now?
Well, now I need a hype man. I would appreciate if someone would come and kind of be the hype man. My band are pretty good. I got some pretty good... They're like the heckle-proof band, man. Anytime someone throws something from the audience and I pretend I'm tuning my guitar because I don't quite know where to go, they're one of the boys, without fail, bounces something back to the audience.
Feist, do you remember doing a gig with Da Bloody Gashes?
No.
This is a gig that Peaches played with Da Bloody Gashes, a band called Da Bloody Gashes. And what I wanted to ask you about was nudity and rock and roll. I understand they were opening for Peaches. They got nude, and then you guys decided, wow, do we need to get nude? When is nudity necessary in rock and roll?
Ah, I see. I think it's all slowly coming back to me, because there was a lot of... So a lot of hijinks at those early gigs, those art gallery, underground after-hours gigs. But
let me just set the stage. So the Bloody Gashes are up there. They kind of get naked. And then you're in the audience with Peaches thinking, do we get naked for the show? Because if we get naked for this show, everybody will want us to get naked for every show we do.
Well, that's the thing, is when someone's opening... Who's taken it to another level? If you try to follow them, then you're gonna fall flat on your face. You gotta stick to your plan. You gotta stick to your thing. Nudity is not necessarily on the Peaches menu. You know, it's like she goes everywhere but there. It's always a matter of what you don't give up that people want a little more titillating. Peaches is intelligent that way. She's not doing it in the Playboy simplicity styles.
But I understand when you got up on stage here after the Bloody Gashes, you guys fake stripped, like you wore the Bloody Gashes tank tops. Do you remember doing that?
You're opening portals in my memory that have not been, they're creaky, rusty hinges. It's like I can barely open those portals.
So that kind of comes back or not really?
It doesn't. It sort of does because I think then I owned that tank top for a while, but I couldn't even remember what.
It was a wild night.
Yeah, it was such a wild night.
Leslie Feist, here we are at the Vancouver Folk Fest. Amazing.
How did this happen?
Yeah, you're playing a folk fest and you just played a blues fest. How many fests have you? Have you done a punk fest? What is the fest history for Feist?
The Fests of Feist of the 2006. It's like they pick a genre and apparently that's what I'm able to do. I don't know. I don't understand. I guess I'm multifaceted, or I guess everyone hears what they want to hear. Look at a man and that's the way he appears to you. Listen to a CD and that's the way it sounds.
So are you going to offer anything different at the Folk Fest versus the Blues Fest? And how did you go over at the Blues Fest? How did the bluesers like Feist?
Well, I actually had a dream last night and woke up murmuring to myself in the dark. And I had this dream that I was playing solo at a huge festival, which I've done a lot in Europe. Even this year, I went and played a few solo, which is a whole other thing. You're in front of that many people and you're alone and it's hard. You're like, hey, over here. There's no way to bounce. There's nothing to reverberate off of. So it just flies and dissipates in the air. So I had this dream that I got up there and it was just chatty chat chat. And I started to play Hey Mr. Tambourine Man, which I actually don't know how to play and I actually couldn't sing along to even if I tried. And all of a sudden the whole audience was like weaving back and forth and singing along. And in my dream I thought to myself, This is great. This is makes it so much easier. So I guess
going to happen today.
Well, maybe I'm only going to do Bob Dylan songs at the Folk Fest.
So Feist, you're very talented. Blues Fest, Folk Fest. If only you played drums. Wait a second. You do play drums?
I try. Only with Jason Collette. He's the only one who will let me.
I've seen pictures of you playing drums. Is there a drum fest in the works for Feist? How long have you played drums?
I have played drums for less time than I'm going to play drums because I intend on being a drummer.
Feist, is it true you really have four Junos? Have you really won four Junos?
It's true. My mom has a little soccer team going on her mantle at her house in Calgary.
Like, that is pretty impressive. Four. How the hell did that happen?
Because I'm a part of this band called Broken Social Scene, and they just keep tossing Junos at them.
Oh, come on. Also yourself.
Well, okay, those ones too.
And I loved it in the Juno Awards a few years ago. You were up there, and you kind of stopped playing, or there was some sort of technical difficulty, wasn't there? I love it. I didn't mean love for you to go through with that, but I loved the emotion that was shown. Like, you just went on with it.
It was so extreme that it couldn't be anything but funny. I mean, I think there was 20,000 people in the arena, and then there was a bazillion, million, gazillion people watching the TV, and then all of a sudden, the PA explodes and starts to make airplane crashing noises, and everyone starts screaming because they're what's going on. And I kept playing, and everyone's running, and this is good. I can set the record straight now. Finally, it's my chance. The PA exploded, and apparently there's like a broadcast mix and there's a in the place where I am mix, and I had no way to know that on the broadcast mix nothing had gone wrong. In TV land, people were sitting there eating their popcorn, none the wiser to what was going on. But meanwhile, just under my vision, there was all the techs running, freaking running, like yelling, screaming, tossing cables at each other. And then all of a sudden they all stopped, and it was like slow motion, like in the movie when everything just slows down. And I thought, well, they stopped, so I guess we must not be live to air anymore. So I stopped and sort of calmly, you know, everyone's screaming, nothing's happening musical anymore. So I leaned down to the guy down there. I said, so you guys stopped? And he looks up at me and goes, with the big eyes, no, we're still alive, like that, with the most beautiful eyes, because if he had been panicking, I would have panicked. And I just laughed and got up and tried to finish the song. But what pisses me off is that apparently, as it went further west and they had the chance for the later time zones, they cut it out, so it looked like I just screwed up. They didn't let the moment have its moment to show that it actually wasn't my fault, you know, or at least give people slight hints that it was not just me messing up the song on national TV.
Feist, you still like to draw on yourself? You like to draw on yourself, don't you? Are there any drawings on you today?
There are none. It was a phase. It'll come back, I'm sure.
What is your obsession with puppets? Some artists are afraid of puppets. Why are people afraid of puppets?
Who's afraid of puppets?
Vanilla Ice is afraid of puppets.
Well, then I won't be pulling out my sock puppet around him. I'm sensitive to people's phobias, but I'm definitely not afraid of puppets. I'm not very good at doing puppets, but I'm a great fan of puppets.
Leslie Feist, is there a Leslie Feist perfume?
No. Sweat, I guess.
I thought there was a Feist perfume, and I was wondering what it does to the men.
Well,
you have a cologne, don't you? Isn't there a Feist cologne?
There is not a Feist cologne, but I think you're mistaking a cologne that has utilized my song to sell their cologne, and you're thinking it's mine. I wish it was, because if I was making the money they're making, then I could make a drum album. I could buy a drum kit.
Feist, are you erotic?
Yes.
What is erotic, Feist? What is erotic?
That's something that does not require a microphone or a video camera.
Because what I was wondering, Feist, is Jack Spicer. Who is Jack Spicer, and why is he erotic?
Jack Spicer is a poet, and he's erotic, I guess, because he was probably a human who had the full range of human abilities. But I can't say especially why he would be erotic more than any other poet or person.
I was curious about him because he did some famous Vancouver lectures, and I understand he's sort of an inspiration, or he's maybe going to be utilized somewhat, I know he's dead and all, on your next CD?
No, in no way is that the truth. I have his book and I love it. But introduced to me by the Apostle of Hustle, Andrew Whiteman. He's a great Jack Spicer fan, and introduced me to Jack Spicer's books, not him as a man. But no, that's you're barking up the wrong tree.
Feist, I wanted to ask you about this thing here that appeared recently in Chart Magazine. I don't know if you can hold this for a second. I don't know if you've seen this at all. It says, "Who I Have the Hugest Crush On" by Alex Chow of Island.
Oh, I met this guy.
Yes, and here's his little story. Feist, I have the hugest crush on Mrs. Feist.
Mrs.
As I like to call her. She is my true number one.
Wow.
She is the foxiest fox from Foxville. She stole my heart when I met her at a broken social scene show.
Uh-huh.
I went up and introduced myself and then thought for a moment that she cared.
I cared.
Months after, she came to a Metric show and didn't even acknowledge my presence. Ah, I call that true love.
Well, I guess love is always stirred. The fires of love are stirred through someone ignoring you.
So do you remember it all, Alex Chow from the band Islands,
yeah,
who calls you one of his favorite crushes?
And he apparently says we're going to get married and live in the suburbs.
I censored that part out from you.
In Newfoundland. And I'm going to have two children with him. Is this guy psychic? Because if that's really going to happen, I better get his phone number or something.
I can provide you with that, actually.
The thing is that Alex Chow of Islands had two things about him that made him very recognizable. One was a completely white suit, and the other was a violin. And I guess there's also the fact that he was backstage in the dressing room marked Islands. So in that situation, I knew who he was, and I was able to compliment him on his playing. And he actually serenaded me, and everybody else in the backstage with an amazing classical piece. But take the man away from his props, and what is a man? I'm sorry, Alex, that I didn't recognize you at the Metric show, but my eyes were glued to Jimmy Shaw.
So it's kind of like the Marilyn Manson thing. You don't really recognize Marilyn Manson out of costume. So he should just dress up all the time and be proud, embrace the islandisms everywhere. He should carry the violin everywhere.
Well, do you wear your hat at all times?
I do.
Do you wear it all the time?
I love my hat.
Well, I know, but there are moments where you don't want people to see you in your hat, therefore see you as you, and then you can just have a coffee at the corner store without getting talked to as Nardwar.
I'd love to have those problems. Bring them on! Feist, I was also wondering a bit more about Chart Magazine. One of the staffers there, Elizabeth Chorney Booth, claims that you stole her mittens.
I'm not a thief.
Okay, borrowed? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Mittens and Chart Magazine.
Alex knows. I should call Alex and ask him about the mittens. I don't know what the mittens are about. She might have lent me some mittens and then for some reason decided to call me a thief. Elizabeth.
I'm not sure if it's the word thief, but are you having a lot of people come from the past, Leslie, and like approach you like, oh, Leslie took the mittens, you know, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I've been hearing some interesting sanding overs of the truth to make stories more palatable for people to be able to deliver them back at me. And then I go, wait a minute, that's not how it happened. But it's in fact, after the case, it's more important what memory they have to carry around that makes them be able to have a laugh at my expense. So they can have it however they need it.
Leslie, how did you learn your French? Was it cereal box French?
Definitely lait, milk, pain, bread. It was Calgary French. product French.
And does this come to haunt you? Like, I don't understand. You know French, but people in France don't like your French? They don't like you singing in French in France?
Because I don't actually know French. When you know Calgary French, that's not actually French.
They actually say to you, Feist, you speak Calgary French. Is that worse than, like, Quebecois French?
There was a turning point for me understanding how I was going to manage to get by in France, if at all. Was one time I was having dinner with some people after a show and in some little town somewhere with Gonzalez when I was touring around Europe with my compadre, Gonzalez. And everybody was saying, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Calgary. And they were like, they didn't understand. And then jokingly and overemphasizingly, I said, Calgary. And they all went, oh, Calgary. And I just thought, oh, that's, you got to get with the guttural. You got to get with the throat, the throat tonsil gymnastics. And you got to get with the And all of a sudden, I was having a much easier time being understood.
In France, it's basically home of cheese, isn't it? I love cheese. I got a disease. I'm addicted to cheese. How is the cheese in France? Is it all it's made up to be?
It's all it's made up to be. It's all there. It's wooden platters of cheeses with flags stuck in them in every backstage. It's the most glorious thing.
How about when you come to North America? Have you had any interesting cheese backstage doing gigs in North America? Because you've done many gigs in North America. How is the cheese backstage? Is there any local cheeses to check out?
No, and you get so that you kind of like the exoticism of the old fort again, or the like mild cheddar. All of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, grilled cheese sandwich when I was a kid. Oh yeah, I used to melt cubes of this in my Kraft dinner to make it extra better, you know? And then
you really did learn cereal box French. You call cheese fort. I call that too.
Fort. Yeah. Oh yeah. Fort. Yeah.
Yeah.
E?
Leslie Feist, who is Clement Greenberg?
Oh, Clement Greenberg is an art critic from New York City, or at least he was residing and working in New York, who I suppose in a strange way was my father's mentor.
He's a very famous art critic, and your father is quite an artiste. Could you explain a bit about your father being an artiste, like being collected by Clement Greenberg, one of the most famous art collectors in the world? Your dad is collected.
Yeah, my dad...
Not that you're not... Are you collected?
I'm not quite the vintage to be collected yet. But no, my dad, he was a painter, and for whatever reason, Clement Greenberg took a shine to him and came by his studio, and I wasn't born yet, but there's stories about my little brother in the high chair and Clem hanging out, and yeah, it was... I get the feeling that he was sort of my dad's enabler, you know, in the way that someone enables you to feel like you can, like someone who you respect understands what you're doing, therefore all full steam ahead, you know?
You are collected though, Feist, aren't you? Like, you go to YouTube and there's tons of videos. Do you feel you're collected, or is there any little instance where you felt you've been collected? You know, somebody has a lot of your stuff, seen a lot of video, like every gig you know that you do is now being taped or something?
Well, now it's a little bit like when you see the cell phone being held up. In the past, I naively thought it was someone going, Jenny, check it out. It's that song you played me once. And they go like this. But now I realize it's like they're making a video. But as long as it's not like butterfly pins in the cork board, I'm okay to be collected.
A little while ago, winding up here with Leslie Feist, I saw a video on YouTube of you in Hollywood, and it was an amazing backdrop behind you. Were you backing up some bigger artists in Hollywood in Los Angeles, or do you travel with a backdrop?
Oh, that amazing light board? Let's just say it's mine. Yeah, it's mine. It cost $1 million. No, that was at the KCRW Evening Becomes Eclectic show, and it was the most stupendous light board I've ever seen in my life, that since then I've gotten wool blankets and Christmas lights and poked it through and tried to create the same effect, to little effect.
That's amazing, because that show is kind of priding itself on being independent, yet they have the biggest backboard ever.
I guess it was truly just for my benefit. And then there's Jumbotrons. There was Jumbotrons next to the light board.
Do you feel pressure to have a banner? Is there a Feist banner that goes behind you when you play? Will you ever get a Feist banner? Do you like banners?
No, I had a terrible experience in By Divine Right where we were opening for the Tragically Hip in all these enormous enormodomes. And actually, that was the birth of DJ Cheese Tray. When you're talking, you love cheese. Well, my lactose intolerant drummer, Mark Goldstein, also a poet, he became DJ Cheese Tray on that tour. That was one of the memorable stories among many. But the other was that we decided we needed a banner so that all the people coming, filing in with their beers and their foam hats, their like foam beer insert here, straw, let's go watch the hip, woohoo hats, that they would know who this band was playing, who they didn't care about. And someone's friend of a friend of a friend made, it was the most heinous banner on earth, which is like bubble letters. It looked like we were like Hanson or something. And since then, you can't, no banners.
Have you seen any bands with banners that you do like? Just going on the banner tip, winding up here with Feist. I'm just fascinated by banners.
I'd tap his shoulder. I'd stick with Nardwar for like months. This is like, I've been waiting years for this, but thanks, Gary.
Okay, winding up here, lastly.
Yes, all right. Banners I liked, well, there's a, it's not a banner, but it's a prop that Jason Collette uses with his band, and he took an old dresser he found on the side of the street, and he's a carpenter, so he took all his drawers out, and he put hinges in special places, and because they play an electric piano, and they want to create the effect of an acoustic piano, they just put the electric piano behind this wood, and people hear what they see, and all of a sudden it sounds like a piano, just because there's this wood in front of it, and I thought that was pretty ingenious.
That is amazing. I saw the legendary punk band from the 60s, The Seeds, and they reunited and did the exact same thing. I'm like, how do you get those keyboard sounds? And I looked at the keyboard, and it was a brand new keyboard in an old case. I love that.
Yeah, people hear what they want to hear.
Feist, Leslie Feist, can you please tell me the importance, lastly, of the Bee Gees and Little House on the Prairie?
There's not much importance to me personally for the Bee Gees, except for Grease. I loved Grease when I was a kid. There was always Star Wars or Grease. You had to pick your team, and I was always a Grease kid. In fact, on a recent Air France flight, they showed Grease, and I was in heaven for those 2 hours. But Little House on the Prairie is a whole other story. It's like, I don't know if it's warped or positive, but my childhood was formed by the Ingles. I mean, there I was living in Calgary with my single mom, and all of a sudden, I was Laura Ingalls in my imagination. I don't know if it's good to dream so far away from your reality.
Have you met any cast members from Little House on the Prairies?
No, but I did date a guy in France for a while who looked uncannily like Charles Ingalls, and when I realized that, it was over. It was just too close to la maison.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Feist. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
No, but huge respect to Nardwar, the human serviette.
Well, thank you very much, Feist. Really appreciate it. And keep on rocking in the free world and doot doodaloot doo.
Doot doo.